Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Dave Marquez, recovered alcoholic.
Dave.
Derek, do you just want us to launch? Did you want us to do a prayer or anything?
It's your show.
Maybe we take a moment of silence and...
Let's do 3 minutes of meditation.
3 minutes of meditation. Fearless leader.
If we could, that prayer.
And then the prayer afterwards. Somebody got a timer on this? I don't. Whenever you're ready. Lay aside prayer. God,
please help me lay aside everything I think I know about this illness, these steps, this program, this book, this conference, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and new experience with this illness, these steps, this program, this book, this conference, myself, and especially you, God.
All right. Everybody here that's going to be here, all right? Again, good morning. My name is Dave Marquez, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, David.
God-given sobriety dates, May 9th, 1993. Mike and I drew it up in the dirt how we want to do this about 30 minutes ago. Took about 2 minutes. So we're just going to go. We're going to flow. We want this first and foremost to be a two-way street, a dialogue. We want interaction. We don't in any way, shape, or form intend this to be a shotgun and just pounding you with a bunch of information and experience and not being interactive. So we really want you to participate. And I love seeing a full room, so there's no reason why there shouldn't be a lot of participation. And one of the things I'd like to offer to you right from the get-go till the end of this thing, when we book it for the airport, is a little thing that I like to call spiritual consent, which means that I will be open with you and you can ask me anything about my experience regarding alcoholism, recovery from alcoholism, anything that I may share or like to elaborate on or what have you. Just keep in mind that that consent is reciprocates, which I may ask you a few questions as well. Okay. I know that having done this, been in a lot of these myself and done a few of these myself, that there's things that come up inside me that I want to blame you for what you said. But it's really something that you said that stirred something that was already there inside me, so you might want to keep that in mind too. Last night, Mike talked about intent. And the meeting last night after we all talked was also partially about intent. And my intent for this weekend, first and foremost, is to come to this thing from what is described in the foreword of the third edition as where recovery begins. That at its core, it's simple and personal. And when one alcoholic shares with another, experience, strength, and hope, not one or the other, all three, is where recovery begins. And I would like to enter in a relationship with you this weekend going forward in offering that simple, personal approach to recovery. The second thing is that, and I heard it a few times shared from a few people last night talking about feeling kind of like Lone Rangers in Alcoholics Anonymous, your group. 10 years ago in Fresno, we were the same way by the book group. The original big book group that I was raised in Fresno became a shell. And I had to decide, do I want to sit in there and change it, try and change it anyway, or move on and do something different? And me and a few guys that I was sponsoring decided to do something different. We started by the book group. and it was shared with us by a workshop that Bob had done, the first one that we had done with Bob, was that if we just went out there in our AA community and shared in a clear, concise, understandable, unafraid message of what's in this book and our experience with it, and really nothing more, nothing less, with no shtick, that we could change the face of Alcoholics Anonymous in our community. So it's been about 10 years since that's happened, and quite frankly, I actually haven't been in the area for about three, four years. You can now go to Fresno and not only go to our meeting, but there's probably another half dozen meetings that have spawned from it, from people that came into that group and didn't necessarily make it their home group because they left our group after learning how to do this thing out of the book, finally. And they went and started doing missionary work in their own home groups. And from that spawned meetings and within their groups. We have different structures in Fresno, how they do meetings. They call them fellowships, and they have multiple meetings within the fellowship throughout the week. In any event, and then you can go to about a 30-mile radius, a little town called Visalia, Tulare, another one called Reedley, where other people have picked this up. And so we've watched over a 10-year period this thing, the face of AA in our community begin to really change. The truth is unstoppable, and real alcoholics will gravitate to it no matter where they are in their recovery. Okay, because we have to. I was talking with a lady last weekend who actually helped start the Big by the Book group, and she left. She left after about a couple of years and felt she needed made more of a mainstream AA. And she's recently come back. And she was talking about this alienation and ostracization that we experienced, and she felt that we were still experiencing that. And I said, I asked her, have you ever started counting heads of people that have come through the group and are still doing this thing? And we started talking about putting together a little AA family tree picnic next March, a year from now. And trying to encourage everybody that is in this little sponsorship family that's come out of By the Book group that has spread out in a 40-mile radius to include Santa Rosa, San Diego, and see if we can't all come together, and especially in the AA Fresno community, to see, because a lot of these guys don't know each other. Because they go back, like I said, they go back to the home groups. So a lot of them don't really know each other, and they do feel kind of isolated in their own groups. I said, if you start counting heads, I bet you there's about 150 or 200 people at least through generational sponsorship coming out of what we began at By the Book group. And so now they're talking about doing that. And I think if they see that, and they see that unity, much like having the first fellowship of the Spirit in them, you see that you're not as much of a minority as you may think, and certainly not as much of a minority as it was 10 years ago, you know? And there's real power behind that. Our topic this morning, I understand, is step one, spiritual. One of the things that I experienced as I began to sponsor people and go through my steps on a repetitive basis is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is not a fear-based message. And I think probably the first 5 years, 6 years coming out of step one, I was always scared to death. Like, I better do the rest of this or else, right? The spiritual basis of life or else. And I began to sponsor more and more people and going through the book more and more, I started realizing how early on in the book, how early on in the steps, it starts talking about coming to this thing really from a place of fearlessness. Fearless about step two, fearless about step three, step four, step five. Fearless inventory. The fearless decision that God either is or He isn't. Being fearless and thorough from the very start. And I thought, well, how do you get there? I mean, how do you get there? Because step one wasn't never really presented to me in a way of at least coming out of it with something to look forward to than scared to death of. And then I heard somebody talk about it. Someone in our AA family tree, and Don C. And I realized that the coming to believe comes to what the first step in our book is. And I'm not talking about page 58. I'm talking about the first step on page 30. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. Unless anybody... Is there anybody here that's just... This is their first shot at AA? Right here. Have you been to AA before at all?
You mean like this retreat?
No, the first.
No. Okay.
So if you've been to a month's worth of meetings, you've probably heard someone say that finding God is somewhere down deep inside at some point. Fully conceding to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic is conceding to that God that's down deep inside, and that's not a fearless place. But how do you get there? So I have to go down in layers. Right? How is God involved in step one? How is God involved before I even got to step one? Right? So very simply, the book describes this craving that beyond my mental control to stop once I start. How did I get a sobriety date? How did I get a sobriety date, May 9th, 1993, that I wasn't looking for? I wasn't praying, wasn't asking for it, I didn't want it, I gave up on the whole sobriety concept, right? After a year and a half in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the self-knowledge, everything, I ended up just cashing in my chips and saying, wherever alcohol takes me. And on May 9th, 1993, I get a sobriety date that I wasn't looking for in the middle of a drink. Okay? How does that happen? So then the next thing is this mental obsession where I have no effective mental defense. No effective mental defense. The book talks about that the truth is, and we once in a while will tell the truth about this thing, about what gets us to the first drink, and then the truth is that I don't know. Anything that I propose to you about I don't drink because, and it's I don't, other than I don't know, is propping up a mental defense that I really don't have. Okay, and the sooner that I can come to the truth about I don't know, the sooner I can get to brass tacks about fully conceding to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. The sooner I can become unafraid of taking that next step and two, coming to believe in something. It's much easier to come to believe in something that's already occurring. Okay? At least to be aware and be willing to believe in something that's already occurring. And so this conceding to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic in stages as we move through the book. And I do this with newcomers. I don't like hold back because I think it's so important to just follow the directions in the book to get to a place that the rest of the steps, and Mike, I am so on board with what Mike said last night about step two. You think you're having the problems of people not getting through the steps is about step one? I don't think so. I think step two is the crux of it. Step two will determine the focus in which the rest of the steps are taken. But I have to get to this place. It's much easier to come to believe in something that is already existing or is already occurring. So we have this litany of the descriptions of how the obsession takes place. You know, it talks about the most powerful desire not to drink is not enough. It talks about lack of choice. It talks about the memory and the suffering of a week or a month ago is not enough. That doesn't mean I have to remember harder. It doesn't mean I have to be like Guy Pearce and Memento and tattoo shit on my all over my body to remind myself not to drink or of what happened. Okay, or the certain consequences, the fear of. I mean, Bill talked about fear sober me for a bit. Whatever your fear of is, I blew right by mine. Right, okay, and then it gets down to this place of talking about on page 24 about taking drinks, really not thinking about it at all. Later on, it's described as a strange mental blank spot. And a strange mental blank spot, like Don P. used to say, can be the twitch of a muscle. That fast. I can't keep up with that kind of cunning, battling, and powerful spiritual malady. I can't keep up with that. In a strange mental blank spot. And do I have experience with that? If I have experience with that, it talks about that probably beyond human aid. It goes on to talk about on that same sequence. It talks about I'll read it because I don't want to butcher it. It's an open book test, right? I'm in the bottom of 24. When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendency, has probably placed himself beyond human aid, and unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But, which means this is more important than the previous statement. For the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. You are those demonstrations. We are those demonstrations. We're here. Okay? We're here. Unless locked up, permanently insane. right? Die. But we're here. I can't stop when I want to stop. I can't stay stopped once I am stopped under any circumstances. And within the 30-minute period, I go from drinking to die to stopped to driving my car to a place I swore I'd never go that has a solution for recovery from alcoholism. And add insult to injury, by the time the noon meeting's over, I'm asking a guy to help me to walk me through the steps to have a spiritual awakening to recover from alcoholism. Like that. Like I was unconscious. Like an outer body experience. Okay? That is not what I was thinking about. You know, I talk about 11:30. You know, that's not what I was thinking about at 11:27. Hey, let's just go to AA today. You know? Just stop right now. It was not there. Okay? And my sponsor asked me if I was willing to believe that there was a God that could do and did do for me what I could not do for myself, even though I didn't believe in it or him. That God didn't need my consent. He didn't need my prayers. He didn't need my petitioning. That at some point God can just say, you know what? You're done. I need you to do something else other than try to kill yourself and everybody else around you. He didn't say, do you now believe? Are you at least willing to believe that something happened? And he left me with these questions. How'd you get this sobriety? How'd you just stop if you didn't pick it? And then later on down the road, like I told you last night, 14 months before I actually got to the steps. So he posed that question again. How'd you stay sober? What are you doing different? You're doing everything wrong. In the midst of these bedevilments, because that's what I dove into in sobriety, just full bore into these bedevilments. How are you still sober? You have no effective mental defense against the first drink. How are you still sober 14 months later? Book says people like you can't stay sober anything like a year on your own. How'd that happen? And so these questions started leading towards really one answer, and that's this answer that's described in the top of page 25. I certainly didn't earn it. I didn't merit it. It wasn't a right. Am I willing to believe that that's what began to happen on May 9th? I can't produce a sense of ease and comfort powerful enough to keep me from taking the first drink. I mentioned last night also that the treatment facility wanted to convince me that alcoholism was a feeling disease. If I could just produce a sense of ease, or look to you to produce a sense of ease and comfort from something other than alcohol, right? Which was easily squashed by just looking at, haven't I really drank when I didn't want to under all emotional condition or lack of emotional condition? Because I like to live in apathy. Untreated, I like to live in apathy. Okay? And then go down from there into sloth and paralyzing fear. Okay? But if you're apathetic to that, and I think I heard somebody, maybe it was you, Lindsay, you'll watch your life get torn apart brick by brick, and you won't even feel it. The first time that happened to me, that Lindsay was talking about last night, you know, the whole thing was collapsing around me 7 years sober, and I didn't even realize it had happened until it was all rubble. You know? So how is it that in these periods of sobriety, 20 years, no matter what I felt, no matter what I thought, that taking a drink hasn't happened? I haven't been an all-star in AA. I've just lived as hypocritically to these spiritual principles at times on purpose and on accident as anybody I've met. And by all rights, by inventories that I write, I should be drunk. Because I don't know what the day looks like. I don't know what it feels like that would take me back to a drink. I know what the book warns me about, and I've seen it happen in other people's lives. I've never had the same home group. I've never had the same sponsor. I've never had the same vigor about the book or the steps. I've been sponsorless. I've been heavily involved in service. I've been in no service. I've had all these things that people tell me is the deal. They call it now, this deal in where I live. All that has been variable. So I can't say, well, it's this formula and bottle it up and say, this is what's happening, and then give it to you. Right? The only thing that's constant is the thing that I can't explain. I don't need to explain it. I don't even understand it. It's this grace of God that came between me and alcohol. So then we get down to something else. It talks about this spiritual malady, which drives the whole damn thing. Alcoholism demands to be treated. Alcoholism is something that we can recover from. It is the first promise in the book. Recovery, being recovered, does not have to stop at mind and body. The book will later on talk about being spiritually sick, and once we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. The book doesn't make propositions that can't come true. Just because I don't understand it doesn't mean it can't be true or can't happen. It just means I got to seek. Okay? Alcoholism, by the best description I can find, is on 62. It's rooted in selfishness and self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. It's driven by a spiritual malady. So what's that look like to be recovered from alcoholism? Maybe it's a life that's rooted in being God-centered and selfless and not driven by. I know what driven by is because I've been in lots of cop cars. Okay, that's driven by. You get out when they say they want you out. Right? But rather, a life that's guided by courage and faith. Faith means courage, right? A life that's guided by being God-seeking rather than self-seeking. Happy, joyous, and free rather than self-pity under all conditions. The truth and honesty rather than self-delusion. Okay, maybe it's something like that. All right. And at least the people that I know, upline from me, downline from me, in my little family tree that do this, when they're there in 10, 11, and 12, that's what their life looks like. It's not devoid of defect. Right? But their life, my life is no longer driven by these things. Do I fall? Absolutely. Do I make mistakes? Absolutely. Do I do it on purpose? Sometimes. Do I do it on accident? A lot. Right? So, but there's a lot big difference between, it's a whole different universe to be guided by and make these mistakes that I catch in 10 and 11 than being driven around by. It's a whole different universe. Especially when those mistakes can be turned into an opportunity to actually become more finely tuned into the spiritual. Right? So we have this alcoholism that demands to be treated. Once I take the booze away, that's what I'm left with. And it's going to be treated spiritually, or it's going to be treated by a drink, or a bullet in the brain pan, or both. And so, and it's this alcoholism manifests in what we call these bedevilments, right? Page 52. So now I'm going down deeper, and I'm down deeper. Where's the solution in that, right? Now I'm faced with this spiritual basis of life, or else, right? And if you're coming from where I came from initially in AA, that's screwed because I don't think God wants anything to do with me, and I don't want to die an alcoholic death. Later on, I come to find out that there's more, a little deeper, going down deeper into that statement about alcoholic death and spiritual basis of life, the alternatives. And the fact is, I can't pull off either one. And I didn't find that out until later. we are all failures at dying an alcoholic death, but if you're a real alcoholic or addict, you didn't pull it off. Am I willing to believe that I'm a failure at dying an alcoholic death by God's grace? There are people that cried more tears, shed more blood, drank more booze, that are friends of mine that never even got a sniff of recovery. You would think it was a merit system or the amount you drank or misery that would get you here sooner. That's not it. I don't know what it is. It's not my place to explain it. My job is to try and be willing to get on board with it. So we're all failures of dying this alcoholic death by, if you're willing to believe in the grace of God that came between you and alcohol, whatever you want to name it, a higher power that came between you and alcohol. And then you have this other thing, right? So for the first year in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm trying to pound my head against AA, the fellowship, everything but these steps. And then I finally go through these steps and have a spiritual awakening. And I'm still pounding my head with AA trying to save the world, right? And I'm in this fast lane of AA and just sponsoring people and all this other stuff, right? And somewhere along the way, a God-willed program became a self-willed endeavor. And self-will in AA is no less dangerous than self-will outside of AA. And so on each of those occasions. And I come to realize that I can't make a spiritual basis of life happen, no matter how much I try. Now, somebody had, when they presented that to me, they had to support it in the book. I'm like that, right? And so I'm going to share that with you. It's on page 44. Bottom page 44, page 45. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, let's stop there just for a second. AA, by definition, in its own book, is a way of life, correct? We've seen that line, a design for living. So AA in itself is a philosophy of life on how life ought to be lived. If you look at a dictionary definition of philosophy, it's an idea how life ought to be lived. Okay? So AA in itself is a philosophy. It's just a spiritually based philosophy. Many of us would have recovered long ago, but we found, have I found, right? Turning statements into questions. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. There I am. There's the rub. I come in this thing and start pounding away at AA with me trying. My effort, right? We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might. Here I come, self-willing an AA program, right? Spiritual program. But the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. I can come in here and get on board with this program and then short-circuit the whole thing by making it a self-willed endeavor. Something that I think I'm doing on my power. Right? So that brings me to this place. Alcoholic death, spiritual basis of life. I don't have the power to pull either one off. And this brings me to this place. I can't pick the sobriety date. I don't know why I start. Right? And I can't define what I'm thinking or what I'm feeling when I start. And I have a spiritual malady that drives the whole damn thing. And right underneath there, I have to ask that question, how's it all happening? If all that present, why is it that I'm still here sober? 20 years. 14 months. Dark night of the soul at 7 years. At 12 years. Why is it that I'm still sober? Inventory says I should be drunk. 11 steps say I should be drunk. Why am I still sober? Am I willing to believe that Something happened on my sobriety date that involved a higher power doing for me what I could not do for myself, the great fact and the central fact. Page 25. I used to read that as something to look forward to, so somebody presented to me to look at it from a first step position since it was in the first step part of the book. And it talked about this spiritual experience that revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, our fellows, and God's universe. And in the blink of an eye, in a 30-minute period, I go from a wanting to die consciousness, drink until whatever happens, happens, to going and checking into a place I swore I'd never go that has a solution to alcoholism. All of a sudden, I'm interested in a guy that I'm going to call sponsor, who is an active minister in a local church of Christ with every resentment towards Christianity known to man. And I'm going to ask this guy to be my sponsor. And all of a sudden, I'm interested in where's God play in all this. And I realize that all these obstacles that I had been propping up towards seeking a relationship with God, coming to believe in a God that can restore me to sanity, were the luxury of somebody that wasn't desperate. But at the same time, this fully conceding to my innermost self, I had to realize, become willing to realize that something is taking place that I could not pull off on my own, ever in my drinking history. And I had to concede to the innermost self. I had to concede that the central fact did occur. The central fact did occur in me. That something entered into my heart that did the miraculous on May 9th, has continued to do the miraculous, doing for me what I can't do for myself when I wasn't looking for it, wasn't consenting, wasn't praying, doing all the wrong things. And that God can do that whenever He wants to. But I can't stay there. And we'll talk about the next session, I suppose. But at some point, this has a transition from realizing that I've had my back to this thing that gave me sobriety in the first place to turning and facing and entering into a relationship with, which is what step two is really gearing us up for. Because if we don't do that, we may not survive this thing called alcoholism.
Can I add something?
You can continue.
Can I add something?
Absolutely.
Thank you. My name is Mike Shane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Dave and I are winging this, man. So, you know. How are you guys this morning?
Good.
I love the way he talked about that. But I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about the unmanageability. I want to talk about this idea of, okay, now I'm sober. Now what? Let me tell you something, folks. When I came in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and after I came out of the DTs, and I'm sitting there at 1311 York Street, and I was about a week sober, there was one truth that I knew, and that was I could not stay sober with the brain that I had. I had 25 conversations going on at the same time, and two porno flicks. That's exactly what my brain looked like. Okay? Scott understands this. All right? And there's others that do. You see, because I needed something to take me away from the here and now. One of the things that Frank had me do, and I was only sober about a month, he said, I want you to go down to Skid Row. And we all smoked back then. Okay, all of everybody. You smoked in your doctor's offices. It was great. And he said, I want you to take a carton of cigarettes, and I want you to go down to Skid Row, and I want you to go up, and I just want you to talk to these drunks. And I said, yeah, I don't need to do that. I said, yeah, I know I'm like them. He said, that's not where I'm coming from. That's not what I'm going after. And I said, what are you going after? He says, just go do what I tell you to do. Frank was one of those guys that that I really love that way, because he just wouldn't indulge my bullshit. And we all come in here with a whole lot of bullshit. See, we're the most important things in the world when we come in. All right? And Frank would just tell me things. I used to call Frank up and I go, oh, this is happening. He'd say, did you pray? No. Click. I mean, that's the way he handled me. So I go down on Skid Row and I take this carton of cigarettes down and I'm talking to people. And halfway through this thing, I start to realize something. And what I realized was this. All of these people I talked to, every single one of them, didn't understand the reality of their life. Not a one. They all had a game plan. They all were something better than this. They all had the next deal coming down the pike, right? And so all of a sudden, I come in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life is absolutely 100% totally unmanageable. So I know I can't drink, right? I know I can go out and get a drink. I know that I'm powerless over it. I told you last night when I talked that my first step basically tells me what? I'm going to drink again. That's really what it says. But now I'm left with this insanity. Not just the insanity of the first drink. I became aware that I suffered from that. But then unmanageability creeps in. Now, the big book handles it in a bunch of whole different ways. And I love the way David approached this idea of trying to be a better person. Anybody here do that when they were out there drinking? I'm going to be a better person. How many of you went to church? Yeah? You know, how many of you got up in the morning and you said, God, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to just be a better person today and maybe God will have something to do with me? See, I didn't really doubt there was a God. What I doubted was that God would have anything to do with me. Okay, because I had committed every sin there was in the Ten Commandments and enjoyed doing most of them. That was the problem. So all of a sudden I'm left with this unmanageability. So I want to direct you to page 52 in the big book. And I'm going to go forward and backward here real quick. But on page 52 in the big book, we have these things that Dave talked about, and it's called the bedevilments. Right? So we had to ask ourselves, this is the third paragraph down, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Right? We were having trouble with personal relationships. Was anybody in here having trouble with personal relationships? How about now? Who's having trouble with personal relationships right here, right now? Now, I'm going to tell you a trick. You want to know a real trick? This is a trick. This is in the secret writings of Dr. Bob. God only works in the here and now. He doesn't work an hour from now. He doesn't work last week. If I'm praying for my rent to be paid next month, I'm wasting my time. God works here. Right here, right now. This is all we got. Okay? So, I have to ask myself these questions like that. What about today? Right here, right now. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? I thought I was really cool until I went out to dinner just two nights ago with a friend of mine and she brought up this guy and I got this hit in my head, chest. I had forgotten about it. And he and I used to be really good, not in the program, but he and I used to be really good friends, and all of a sudden we're not talking to each other. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? This is the best one of the bedevilments, and I'll tell you why. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Anybody have trouble with that? Today? Can you tell me, Lindsay, that you're going to be happy all day long, no matter what?
No. That's hysterical. That's a joke, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't know about you, but when I was brand new, I was like this. I mean, when I was brand new, it was like I'd be, you know, ecstatic, and 20 minutes later, I want to kill myself for you. Right? All because somebody walked in, usually a girl, and she didn't say hi, right? And I was broken. I was literally broken. You don't mind me going off here, do you?
No,
no. Let's have fun with this thing. We were prey to misery and depression. See, these last two statements, what they're telling me is I have no control over me. Right? How many of you experienced this since you've been sober? Who's lying? Whoever didn't raise their hand. Have you ever had this experience sober? Everything out here is great. And you're a wreck. Right? We couldn't make a living. I couldn't make a living when I came in, but here's the trick to that question. Can you make a living the way you want to make a living? And I don't mean about amount of money. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, can you follow your dream? Or are you subject to the man, right? I got to get the paycheck. We had a feeling of uselessness. Anybody ever feel that? Anybody in here, when they were drinking, feel like they were a waste on society? You want to know why? Because you were. I was. I sucked. Everything from society could possibly give me. Right? I love Paul Martin. Paul Martin was one of my absolute favorite men. He died with 62 years of sobriety. He used to sit at the table with Bill and Lois. Paul would get up and he'd talk and he'd go, well, if you feel guilty, you probably are. Right? We're full of fear. Anybody in here scared today? Anybody in here suffered fear today? Do you have any fear yet?
I haven't checked it.
He's not even awake to it. Alright. We're unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. One of the beautiful things that happened to me when I hit 1311 York Street is I would be whining about my life, right? And they would look at me and say, your best thinking got you here, Mike. Maybe we got a little bit better way. I'm going to tell you what I find personally is the crux of this book, and that's on page 45, second paragraph. This is the whole crux to the whole book, to me. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So, I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sitting here with this blender brain. And we have a guy at Happy Way, his name is Gene, and Gene has one of the greatest analogies of getting sober and suffering from a spiritual malady. And his analogy is, have you ever gone in an outhouse? They smell bad. But all of a sudden, we go in the outhouse, and if you stay in the outhouse for a while, it doesn't smell bad anymore. Then all of a sudden, you stay in that outhouse, you start to build a little house in there so that you can stay in there. See how delusional we can get? Mm-hmm. Most people that leave Alcoholics Anonymous do not make a decision to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't go, well, you know, this has been a great 15 years, I think I'm going to go drink. That's not how it happens. Usually when my life's falling apart, it brings me more into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What ends up happening is that I start to just drift out of Alcoholics Anonymous. All of a sudden, I don't need this meeting. All of a sudden, I didn't like what Red said last night. He pisses me off. Well, Scott's his friend, so guess what? I better not go back there. They're going to gang up on me. Well, I can't call Dave. He might tell me the truth. Right? And all of a sudden, what ends up happening to me, right? I start drifting right out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know people that hide out in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Uh-huh. I'm going to tell you something truthfully, folks. There's a lot of people in AA that know the lingo who are sicker than shit. Everybody knows the lingo. We've been so treatment-centered, bastardized anymore that, excuse me, I do have opinions. And I'm sober long enough to where I really don't care what you think when I talk about them. But the truth is what's happened is everybody knows the lingo. Everybody knows how to work the system. We all know this stuff. So we come in here, and all of a sudden I've got this absolutely unmanageable life that Dave was talking about. At 20 years, at 7 years, at 6 years, at a month, at a week, am I so far removed from my own reality? Right? Lack of power, that is my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live. And it had to be a power greater than, obviously. I mean, it is so stinking obvious. I got the AA at 25. Come on, guys. It's got to be, I mean, you know, there's got to be something better in this world than that, right? So, the problem is that I'm left with this mind. I'm a firm believer in this. When I'm 30 days off of alcohol and drugs, my body's as clean as it's going to be. Right? What's left is this. What's going on between here and here? I love this. I got to tell you, I looked at this when I got this last night, and I'm not going to read it. You can read it yourself. But on the back page is my... I would have loved to have met Harry Tebow. I really would have. And he writes that we are a bunch of narcissistic, self-centered human beings. We are. The mind of a sober alcoholic, when they're new, is the same as an acute neurotic. You've heard that before. Right? How do I get from here to here? That's what this God thing's all about. I personally cannot take credit, as Dave so well said. But what I can do is I can sign up to do this deal. But not just do this deal. There's a difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. I know step tacticians who have never changed. I know people in Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of time who are still conning people, still lying, still cheating, everything under the sun. And if you ever sat down with them, they could draw a blackboard out of how to write an inventory that would blow you away. But they never changed. What does that tell me? That tells me that just because I work the 12 steps doesn't mean anything's going to happen, does it? Could I lie through the whole thing? Can I do that and not even touch myself? What's the possibility? Anybody in here ever work the steps to try to manage your life? Did it work? Did it work? No. I have to find a power by which I can live, right? That power can't be me. I can also tell you right now, it can't be you. There has to be something out there bigger than me that's going to solve my problem. And the only reason for me to do this work is to get closer to Him and let Him take it over. Because what we're going to start talking about down the road here, actually in the next session, is coming to believe that there's this power, how you do that, how you lay aside prejudice, and what does it really mean to turn your will and life over to the care of God? What does that really mean? What does that look like? How many of you had a point in time in sobriety? I don't care if it was a week or 20 years, where you wanted to kill yourself. Thought about it. It's all about my manageability. It's all about me. It's all about finding a power that will change me. Right? I love, and I've done this. Okay, there isn't one mistake I haven't made in AA. I'm going to tell you here, right now. I have done it all. All right, except drink. I have not had a drink in 39 years as of last Tuesday. How many, you know, what ended up happening is I have tried to work these steps in order to change my life, and it didn't work. What ends up happening to me is I go into here to get closer to God, and let's just say I have a marriage over here that's causing me a whole bunch of problems, right? And I want to fix this marriage. And I go through the steps, and all of a sudden I start getting sponsees. Marriage ain't fixed. I'm getting sponsees, right? All of a sudden I start making a few bucks, but the damn marriage ain't fixed, because that's what I wanted it to work on. And God's saying, no. I'm going to tell you what I think is this is all about for me. God has a plan. I believe this. You want to get down to core beliefs? I believe this. I believe that I was predisposed to be alcoholic. I also believe that somewhere when I was very young, I have no idea when, I got a mental message that said, you're not good enough. You're not good enough to make it in this world. It ain't going to happen for you. You're not tough enough. You're not strong enough. It ain't going to happen. So what ends up happening is I'll go see a movie, or I'll read a book, or I'll meet somebody that I think really has it, and I try to emulate them. Right? Then all of a sudden I start to pour drugs and alcohol on all of this, and the real me gets lost, and this fake me becomes the reality of my life. And I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with this drink problem, and I'm living a lie in every way, shape, or form. I don't even know what the truth is after I get here. I know that I got beaten up by alcohol, right? Paul Martin used to say that surrender to alcohol lasts for a very short period of time. It's just enough to sort of break us open so that we come into AA and or wherever you are, NA or CA or whatever you're doing. It breaks us open. I would guesstimate, if there's Al-Anons in the room, they've had that same thing happen where life got too much and they had to do something about it, right? But what ends up happening to the alcoholic is simply, I don't even know who I am. I'm totally lost out here. I'm operating under what's called survival techniques. That's all I'm here to do. I realized when I was 10 years sober that I live my life like you were the enemy. That's how I live my life, because I was always looking for the next blow to come. right? So how do I get from there to here to where I can live in my own skin and be happy in this world in the here and now? That's unmanageability. And when I look at unmanageability today, I'm 39 years sober. I just went through the steps. I fifth stepped November. I finished my amends in December. And when I look at my unmanageability, I don't look at unmanageability from the place of where it was when I was drinking. I look at it from the place of what's going on in my life and my unmanageability today. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Can I control my emotional nature? Can I make a living? Am I prey to misery and depression? Do I feel useful to anybody? Without a purpose in your life, you're not going to be happy. I can guarantee you. I can also guarantee you, I know the secret to happiness. I really and truly do. You want to know what it is? It's not being in my own head. It's about being out this way. I have literally, since I've been sober, been in a buffet apartment. I had a 55 Plymouth Fury with fur on the dashboard. It was horrible. I mean, this was the bottom of the bottom. And a guy at York Street gave me the car, right? I didn't know where the rent was coming from. What time do we go to on this one? Okay. I didn't know where the rent was coming from. A long-term relationship for me was a weekend. All right? I was insane. I had nothing going on, and all of a sudden this guy says to me, "Would you be my sponsor?" And it turned me. It took me from absolute insanity to, "I care about you." And I was so happy that I got tears in my eyes. I've also been in this position. I had a house by Wash Park in Denver, which is sort of a decent neighborhood. A 6-foot-tall, blonde, beautiful flight attendant wife, doing commercial real estate downtown, wearing Ferragamo shoes and new suits back in those days. Right? And I wanted to kill myself. The secret to happiness is to not be in my life. It's to be in yours. It's to be a part of something out here. How do I get from there to here? That's what this weekend's about. I'm done. Thank you.
Should we open it up?
Yeah, let's open it up. This isn't going to be a one-way conversation, guys. Anybody want to say anything?
Questions?
Hey,
John.
I have a trouble grasping the thing where you say you didn't have anything to do with it, the higher power got you sober. But it seems to me like you did do something. You made an effort. You actually admitted that you were powerless. That you actually made yourself go to me and learned something about it. But I don't understand the distinction between the two, I guess.
When? You mean like leaving the pool hall and going to the meeting?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, was that God doing that too?
Did you ask me then? If you asked me then, I would have told you yes. That was me doing that. I realized that today that on my best day, 5 minutes after a 10-week binge, having given up on Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have not gotten to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would have done something else. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, drinking was not my only mode of self-destruction. Mike talked about every sin known to man. You know, and I talked a little bit about the 12 and 12, and where Bill talks about these seven deadly sins, and he makes this qualifier in there that says that most of us haven't taken them to these rock bottom levels. Well, when I look at that, I look at it like a checklist. Yeah, Yeah, all but one. And that on my will would not have me going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Was I going? Is that me doing that? Yeah. On my power, on my will, I would have been doing something completely different. The when I start taking the credit for the power I think I am, I have in just participating in a spiritual basis of life, going to a meeting, denies the God that's down deep inside me. Because everything in Alcoholics to me is counter to my will and contrary to how I've always lived my life. And I remember my very first sponsor talking about it's going to get AA is going to, the spiritual place is going to be going, you're going to be going against the grain. At some point you're no longer going against the grain. I don't know when going against the grain stops. Right? It seems like it gets easier. Sometimes it seems like it's getting impossible. But yes, was I going? Yeah, that's me in mind and body. But my will would not have me going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My power would not have me going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially in that condition. So I don't see it that way anymore. I would like to. I would like to take credit. You know, I can claim it. I can claim that power. But I don't take credit for the power.
Name's Roger, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Roger.
I shared last night about when I had really gotten to a really, really, really dark place. And this whole thing about just realizing now that it was only God's, just this grace thing that allowed me to, you know, just, I guess God pulled back the curtain and just see, like Mike said, just this, just get a picture of this, who this thing me that I think this me is, that I think I'm trying to operate out of, that I have to be this me and I have to get control of this thing. And it's just like, you know, the reason I'm here right now is to allow this complete deconstruction process of who the fucked up fucking fuck I am. And how just the futility of just, I'm just, the reality of just, like Mike had shared, just this whole process that I've been through for years and years and years of who I think I am. And God allowing this process to see, wow, you know, how screwed up is that? And the only hope for me, you know, the only hope at all is to just recognize not just myself, but the condition that we're all freaking born into and what we do with it, and just how screwed up life is. And how screwed up I've screwed my life up. And just, you know, it's like we're in a church setting, so I can use something out of the Bible. It's like there's a real hard teaching from Jesus, and he's, you know, and people were just said, I'm out of here. And he said, his core disciples said, are you going to leave too? And they said, where else would we go? So, you know, this whole process of this complete, I welcome the complete, you know, dismantling and deconstruction process that the steps brings about, and that's why I'm doing it. And, you know, and then the only choice is that. I mean, I don't have to turn my will over to God. I don't know where that's going to go. I don't know what it is. It scares me to death. It's like, how can I support my family? How can I do this? I've got to be in control of this whole thing. But me being in control has just wrecked everything. So, anyway, that's kind of where I'm at and what we're sharing this morning. I've got a lot of other stuff on there, so thanks.
Good. Thank you. You know, I'm sorry. What?
Can I share?
Yeah.
Katrina, alcoholic.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say thanks for you guys sharing, and really touched me. I'm a little more than a year sober, so I have a lot of studying to do. And I read page 25 a lot, but I really appreciate what was shared today because, you know, that was my experience too. And I have a really hard time articulating that, you know, the reason I'm sober is because of the grace of God. But when you guys shared on this today and I saw it, you know, what I see has happened for me is when I came, and it says on page 25, but we saw that it really worked in others. And I just had this picture, like, have you ever guys ever walked in, like, on your parents having sex or something like that? You see, and you can't take that back, you know? And, like, the fact that I saw it was not up to me. You know, because I pursued it in so many other ways. I pursued it in church. I pursued it through spiritual books. I pursued it through mentors. I pursued it through 17 years of meditation and spiritual studies, and I never found it. But what happened one day, I walked in here and I saw it. And when I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. And, you know, you guys always say, AA will really mess up your drinking. You know, well, God messed up my drinking because he allowed me to see the hope, you know. And because I saw it, I was given it. And that, to me, you know, is like we witness to each other what we see, and we allow another person to see. You know, that first person who saw that is the grace of God, you know, and that's unmistakable in my life today. And I'm just so grateful because a lot of people don't get that, you know, and it's not for me to judge, like, why some people get it and why some people don't. But the truth is, a lot of people don't get to see it, but I did. And I'm grateful for that. Thanks for your share.
Thank you. Thank you. I love page 25 in the big book. That's probably my favorite page in the whole book, and because it tells me that I'm not going to like this. Right? People that I sponsor don't ever call me and say, I don't like this process. They never do that, because I tell them up front they're not going to like it. You know? And this is a program that must be experienced. Uh-huh. And the hardest thing to do is try to tell somebody who's in the throes of alcoholism that you can walk around this world a free human being and not think about wanting to take a drug or a drink or anything, because they look at you with this blank stare, right? It's like, really? You know? I mean, they think you're lying, first of all. Then secondly, they think that you're not like them, because they think you have something that they don't have. You know, I came in here, and my very first inventory, and I fist up, I thought I was big army ranger, tough guy, badass biker, and you know what I found out I really was? 10-year-old, scared to death little kid trying to operate in this world with no tools whatsoever. The thing is, and your thing back there is, I see God's grace in the details, and I see God's grace in every little thing. We were having a conversation out front earlier about some decisions that I could have made before I quit drinking that would have just changed everything, and God got me arrested so I couldn't go do this over here, and it worked out much better, you know? I believe that I signed up for this, and I'm willing to do the action. There's a chapter in here that talks about into action. It says it right here. And please, around me, don't ever say, how does this thing work? Don't do that. There's a chapter. It says how it works. Read the black in the book. That's all I got. Do you want to close with prayers, or do we just close these down? And
yeah, I just had a couple of house cleaning items. If you guys are okay with ending the session now?
Unless somebody else has something else.
Go ahead. Thanks, guys.